The first thing to remember about a civil war is it is an extremely dangerous activity. Much more dangerous than an international war. Because if there's an international war, you can have your opinion, you can be neutral. In a civil war, nobody is neutral. An army arrives in your village, you're not neutral. And so it's an extremely, extremely violent and extremely stressful situation for everybody involved. And that is also why both sides hesitate for a long time. Launching a civil war is something you should do when you have thought about it very carefully. So, let's have a look at this. First of all, just some of the basic dates. At the beginning, and that's the end. Begin the Civil War, execution of Charles I. Now, just a couple of things about these two things. You need to take very seriously the execution of Charles I. Now, today you have a revolution or a coup d'etat, and the dictator is executed. No big deal. Remember, at this time, Charles believed he was king because of the will of God. Most of the population believed that Charles was king because God wanted him to be king, and God was something people took very seriously. So this was an absolutely incredible change, and people were very superstitious about it and very worried about it from the beginning to the end. So let's go back to just before the Civil War. The Parliament votes a declaration called the Grand Remonstrance, a declaration criticising the king, denouncing the illegal taxes, pas des taxis illégales, mais des impôts illégaux, pas des taxis illégaux, mais des impôts illégaux, illegal taxes, and demanding more freedom for the Parliament, more rights for the Parliament. This document, the Grand Remonstrance, the criticism of the king, is in your brochure. It's on page 9. The king is very angry. He accuses 5 of the members of Parliament of treason. Treason. And he asks the House of Lords to arrest the members of Parliament, and they refuse. So the king arrives himself. The king comes to the Parliament with soldiers and says, I want to arrest these 5 people. And they had already gone somewhere else. Yeah, intelligent idea. And after that, the Parliament decided to have soldiers in front of the Parliament to protect the Parliament from the king. This is not yet a civil war, but you're very close to a civil war when the Parliament has soldiers to protect the Parliament from the king. Remember, in theory, in the king's opinion, at least, the job of the Parliament was to help him. He says, I'm the king, I make all the laws, come in. Entrez, mais ne fermez pas la porte. The king's idea was that the Parliament's job is to help me. I'm the king, I make all the laws, this is normal. Democracy is an idea he doesn't even know. He doesn't even know the concept. And so now the Parliament is deciding they want more freedom. Charles moves away from London, and the Parliament begins to function without the king in March 1642. In March, the Parliament begins to function without the king. They decide to name new leaders to the army. There is not yet a civil war, but they are preparing. So we will have the new generals. Now, normally, only the king can name the leaders of the army. But the Parliament takes this on. And the Parliament passes some laws which it applies without the agreement of the King. So the Parliament is beginning to act independently. And in August 1642, the King makes a declaration from Nottingham in the middle of England. He says, "All those who wish to defend their King against this Parliament, come to Nottingham and we will form an army." And this is the beginning of the Civil War. Now, I want to introduce two quotations here. Come in.
Excusez-moi, on a
un problème de train. Oui, oui. Two quotations for here. The first one, this is from a gentleman called Clausewitz, who's a very old, he's dead, but he was an expert on war. And he said, "War is the continuation of politics by other means." And this is especially true in a civil war. Civil wars are extremely political. When you ask, for example, the commercial classes, "Join my side in the war," in the Civil War, they say, "Well, why? What is the advantage for us?" It's a political negotiation, extremely political, civil wars. And the other one is Lenin, "Revolution is the festival of the oppressed." When there was no king anymore, suddenly people were tremendously free. But for 100 years, 200 years, 300 years, we thought that the king was king because it was God's will and it could not change in any way. Now there is no king. There's a king, but there's a... Oh, maybe there are some more new ideas that we could look at. And so there is an explosion of books, pamphlets, new ideas on society. Lots of new ideas of society. Massive debates. And I will tell you a little bit about this. Some historians have written books studying all the little pamphlets, les brochures, published at this time. Lots of ideas, yes? Some people said, the king is no longer king. This means that Jesus will come back to earth very soon. It's the sign. It's a sign for the new millennium. And this was a very popular idea. Many new political groups rose. And because we are in the 17th century, a political group and a religious group, it's the same thing. So many new religious groups rose. Parfois on dit les sectes, la montée des sectes, mais sectes n'a pas le sens d'aujourd'hui. C'est le sens d'un petit groupe religieux avec de nouvelles idées. And the many, many sects became very, very popular. Because suddenly the church tribunals who told you what you must think had disappeared. The king, he's running away to Nottingham to find his friends. So lots of new ideas. It's not necessary to be frightened of hell and priests. We're in a new world. And I want to talk to you about some of the groups who were the most popular, the most influential. One of there are 20, 30, 50 groups, but I will only tell you about three or four. The most important ones. The Levellers is one religious group which becomes more popular. So what do? Well, they go from village to village and say, "I have come to talk to you about the new world." So, all right, you haven't. Well, we've got big feet. Well, let's meet over there tonight. Yes, okay. I will tell you the king, and this is the reason you must join the civil war and defeat the king, because we need a new society, which... Yeah, the level is very, 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 very influential. They will become very important in the army. I will tell you about that in a moment. The Quakers. La plupart des petits groupes de l'époque ont disparu, mais the Quakers exist encore aujourd'hui. They're more important in America than in Britain, but they still exist in Britain. These are the most important ones. Some of them had very, very radical ideas. The Ranters. The Ranters, c'est un petit peu comme le punk rock de la guerre civile anglaise. The Ranters said, everything the church said is wrong. What is good in the world? Sex, yes. Blasphemy, yes. Dancing, drinking, yes. Is this a new religion for sex, drugs and rock and roll? No rock and roll. Yeah. This is the Ranters, very, very popular, completely new ideas. It's a bit like a sort of anarchist group. The Anabaptists. The Anabaptists, they were against baptism, contre le baptême. Okay, so lots of new ideas on how to live, and new ideas on how to organise society. Now, the Levellers, perhaps the most important, they had a specific political programme. Not a complicated political programme, and they have some members of Parliament as well. And what is their political programme? One, no more monopolies. Peut-être vous vous rappelez que les monopolies, c'était des impôts privés. Voilà, cette demoiselle ici, elle reçoit un livre chaque fois qu'il y a bouteille de whisky de vendu. Yeah? No more monopolies. These horrible private taxes, no more of them. Number two, no more tithes. The tithe is the tax which you must pay to the church. Traditionnellement, 10% de tout ce que vous avez, c'est pour l'église. Yeah? Okay. Now, the Levellers hated the tithes for two reasons. First of all, it's tax. And secondly, it is tax you must pay to the Church of England. And the Levellers thought the Church of England was no good. Yeah? The tithes was always very controversial because the tithes is tax that you must pay to the Church of England if you agree with the Church of England or if you do not agree with the Church of England. Yeah? Church taxes. Okay? Number three, no more enclosures. Vous vous rappelez des enclôtures, the privatization of common land? No ties, no enclosures. Yeah. The privatization of common land, this terrible program, very long program, 200 years of it, where the land is taken from the people and given to the rich. Yeah, the enclosures. And number four, freedom of religion. Everybody can have the religion they want. You have one religion, you have another religion, it's no problem for the Levellers. Now, today, we normally think that freedom of religion is normal. But at this time, freedom of religion is a very, very radical, revolutionary idea. Everybody can have their own idea about God. My God, that's incredible. Because remember, at the time, no. The Catholics said, you must think like this. The Church of England said, no, you must think like this. You must have the Book of Common Prayer. Everybody must use the same prayer book. Everybody must use the same Bible. Yeah? So this is a very, very modern idea. Religion is a personal question. Everybody can have their own religion. Extremely modern and revolutionary and democratic idea. And the Levellers were relatively democratic. Remember, at this time, if you are a Democrat, if you want everybody to vote, you are an extremist. A tiny minority of the population of extremists think that democracy is possible. Because everybody says, well, we have a king, the French have a king, the Italians have a king, everybody has a king. Democracy is impossible. So it's very new ideas. One last group I want to look at before I go back to the Civil War itself is the Diggers. Radical group, the Diggers. Now, what the Diggers did is that they occupied the land. They said, look at the Bible. The Bible does not say that all the land must belong to the aristocracy. No, the land belongs to the people. So let's all go and get that land over there and make a farm. We don't have enough land. That land over there belongs to the rich. Let's go and occupy it. And so they went and occupied land. Of course, after a year or 2 years, the soldiers came and they didn't occupy it anymore. But this is the idea. The leader of the diggers was a man called Winstanley. And I have a little quotation from Winstanley here. True religion and undefiled is this: to make restitution of the earth which has been taken from the common people. Alors, qu'est-ce qu'il disait sur la religion? Il disait, la vraie religion sans tâche, c'est ceci, c'est rendre la terre qui a été volée au peuple. C'est vrai, non? La terre pour tout le monde. Les aristocrates, ils n'étaient pas trop d'accord, hein, sur la terre. And this is a good example of how religion and politics is the same thing in the 17th century. He said, all the land which belongs to the aristocrats, let's take it from them and give it to the poor people. That's religion, but obviously it's also politics.
And they certainly had... had a certain amount of influence.
One more, the fifth monarchists.
So, I am giving you a list of these sects, but that just means small religious groups of a few hundred or a few thousand people who had very radical ideas on what they want.
So the fifth monarchists, they were millenarians. That means they believed that the civil war was a sign that Jesus was coming again. Perhaps you remember that Christian religion says Jesus came once and he will come again. That's the sense of the Bible, he will come again. Okay, and the fifth monarchists said, this now is the time. Look, the king is fighting with his own people. It's a great sign of great catastrophe. It's because Jesus will come again soon. Maybe not next week, maybe the week after. Yeah, okay. What are you doing on Thursday? Yeah, no, I exaggerate. So the fifth monarchists were millenarians. Yes, millenarians. And so they said, what do we need to do? We need to purify our country. We need to purify our society in preparation for the arrival of Jesus. C'est un peu comme vous passez l'aspirateur avant que votre maman revienne à la maison. Similaire, mutatis mutandis. And they said, what we need a country where all the law is based on the Bible. We need to follow the Bible very closely because Jesus is coming soon and he will not be happy if we don't do that. Okay. So, there's an explosion of new ideas. Political groups, debates. You always, in a civil war, you have more debates. So, yeah, the army, there's an army arriving. Oh, who is it? It's the king's army. Should we support the king's army or should we join the parliament? I don't know. What do you think? Well, what kind of society do you want? It's extremely political atmosphere because you cannot be neutral. The army will arrive the day after tomorrow. Are we supporting them or are we fighting them? The other thing which is very interesting in this period is that the new ideas were often carried by groups of women. Now, the situation of women in the 17th century was, you know, pretty low, as you can imagine. However, when the king was no longer ruling, this helped. All these new ideas encouraged women to organize themselves. And in 1649, for example, there is the Women's Petition. Which is a document, a declaration of radical women. And they say, "Have we not an equal interest with the men of this nation in those liberties and securities contained in the Petition of Rights?" Est-ce que les libertés que demande une partie du Parlement, est-ce que ce n'est pas aussi important pour les femmes que pour les hommes? Bon, à l'époque, ça c'est radical, hein? Ah ouais, les femmes commencent à parler politique. C'est incroyable. OK? And I'll continue. "And can you imagine us to be so sottish or stupid as not to perceive or not to be sensible when daily those strong defences of our peace and welfare are broken down and trod underfoot by force and arbitrary power?" So, again, it's the idea that women are just as intelligent and just as important as men. This is a very radical idea at the time, even today, a little bit. And in several of the radical groups, said, "We can have women leaders or men leaders. Men can be priests as well. Women can be priests as well." That's a very, very new idea. Now, an idea which has a very long history, I don't know if you know, but in England today, the Church of England has men priests and women priests today. But this is a very new idea, 10 years ago, I think. They decided, maybe 15, because time passes very quickly when you're old. But 10 or 15 years ago, the Church of England in England today said, okay, women can be priests as well. This is a new idea. Yeah? Donc, il y a des prêtres anglicains femmes aujourd'hui, depuis 10 ou 15 ans. Et bon, ça c'est au 17e siècle, c'était du avancé, de chez avancé. Si vous avez des questions, n'hésitez pas. Oh, d'accord, okay. Okay. So, let's go back to the war. The civil war has started. On the one hand, you have the Parliament, and we call their soldiers roundheads. Les têtes rondes, à cause de la coupe de cheveux, je sais pas. And on the other side, you have the king's soldiers, and we call them cavaliers. And you can see, I will put on the blog some video of a film. So do have a look at the blog because you will find, I'll put on some video of the film. And the cavaliers are the aristocrats with hair, you know, the men, yeah, with hair, wigs right down here, and very beautiful. And of course, the Parliament side, they are Puritans. La vie simple et la religion pure. So they have very simple clothes. Yeah? So this is the fight that begins. However, the king's army is very united. What do we want? The old system. Yeah? Power for the king. The Parliament side is rather divided. We don't want power to this king. We want this king, but we want him to make an agreement. No, we want another king. No, we don't want a king. Yeah? A lot of different ideas. A minority on the parliamentary side are Republicans. The Republicans are a minority. Because Republic is a very bizarre... Déjà, le mot n'existe pas. D'accord? Comment c'est? Okay. Yeah, but the people who don't want a king are very exceptional. So, what happens? Well, the parliamentary army goes around the country. Of course, when the parliament army arrives in a region, you occupy this town, you say, right, okay, who are the royalists here? So, oh, it's these people are royalists. Okay, we will take their land and their money to help the courts, yes? We will take the money from... And the opposite, when the king's army arrives in a town, say, all right, okay, who are the parliamentarians here? And they will take their money. It's a very, very bloody... A civil war is not fun, yeah? Very, very hard. Because, of course, a town can become occupied by one army and then the other, and then by one army and then the other. It's not fun.
Parliament controls London, and the King is based at Oxford. Now, this is not an accident. London is the capital. It is much, much, much bigger than all the other towns. And London is the centre of trade, the commerce. So the support for the Parliament comes from the commercial classes. This is why we sometimes think of it as a bourgeois revolution. That it is the new society, commerce, world trade, a little bit of industry, and a new religion. Whereas the King is, no, the old system, land is the most important, not commerce, a bit of commerce, okay, but land is what, land and aristocracy and the church. No, commerce and a new religion. So it's a fight between two visions of society. So, what happens? We have a series of battles. Il y a une soixantaine de batailles. Je vais vous donner quatre parce que sinon ça va pas marcher. Vous allez vous perdre complètement. Et je les oublie. Ce n'est pas vraiment des matchs de football, ok? Edge Hill, the Battle of Edge Hill. The Royalists won. Parliamentarians nil. Yeah. The first battle is won by the King. C'est pas vraiment des matchs de foot, c'est pour rigoler. Mais c'est pas obligé de rigoler, c'est facultatif. Okay. Second battle, Marston Moor. Is won by the parliamentarians. And little by little, one man, Oliver Cromwell, becomes a more and more important leader of the parliamentary army. And he decides, after this situation, in 1645, after 3 years, Oliver Cromwell says, we need to have a different army. We will never win. The system is no good. We're not going to win. We need a different army. So, let's have a look at the reason why. The parliamentary army was a very traditional army at the beginning. What is a traditional army? Okay, let's see. Who should be general here? Are you an aristocrat? No. Oh, you can't be general then. You're an aristocrat. You must be general. You're not very good at military matters, but that doesn't matter. You're an aristocrat, so you must be general. This is the traditional way of doing things. And at the beginning of the war, the parliamentary army continued with the old way of doing things. Hierarchy, because of whether are you an aristocrat, are you not an aristocrat, which is a rather stupid way of organising an army. Yeah, you want the best military people at the top. And this is what Oliver Cromwell said. Oliver Cromwell said, we need a new model army, and I want at the top of the army the most determined fighters. I don't care if they are aristocrats or not. And this is the new model army. Very modern in technology, very modern in ideas. You see, fundamentally, the Parliament has an advantage. Because the King's army, let's look at the King's army. Here's the King. And here's his army. What is the unity of the King's army? We want the old system. Oh, hello, Mr. King. I want you to be King for a long time. Well, thank you very much. Here's some money for you and here's some land for you. It's a community of interests. Okay. Look at the parliamentary side. Here you have people, some of them, I want a completely new society. We are fighting for freedom. Freedom of religion, for lower taxes, for more power for ordinary people. So the ideals, the political ideals, were on the side of Parliament. And this is a tremendous advantage in a war.
It's a long time ago, the Vietnam War. On one side, you have the most powerful country in the world, the United States of America, with the best technology in the world and the most money in the world, and they lost. On the other side, you had a very poor country of peasants, but who had the political advantage that they were fighting for the freedom of their own country, and which is absolutely incredible that America lost to Vietnam. C'est un peu comme si le PSG venait ici, et nous on jouait contre eux et on gagnait 6-0, quoi. C'est impossible, presque. Surtout si vous savez moi sur l'équipe. Okay, so the same thing, to go back to the Civil War, the Parliament had a great advantage because it had the enthusiasm of people who wanted a new society, which is a tremendous advantage. And Oliver Cromwell is the person who understood if we want to win against the king, we need to mobilize the enthusiasm of the people. Si vous vous rappelez de votre histoire de la Révolution française, c'est un peu le rôle de Robespierre, de dire, il faut mobiliser le peuple, sinon on ne va pas s'en sortir. Après, parfois, il regrette de mobiliser le peuple. Mais bon, dans ce premier temps, ça semble une bonne idée. Okay, so you have the new model army. After that, you have the some more battles. I'm not going to give you all the battles. And in March 46, Charles surrenders. Donc le roi se rend en 46. Now, because he is a very intelligent king, he surrenders to the Scottish. Donc il se rend pas à l'armée anglaise, mais à l'armée écossaise. Parce que j'ai oublié un petit épisode. L'Écosse a décidé au début de la guerre de soutenir le Parlement à condition que le Parlement garantit qu'ils vont abolir les évêques en Angleterre comme en Écosse. Donc revendication religieuse. Donc, au début de la guerre, j'aurais dû le dire il y a 20 minutes, au début de la guerre, l'Écosse, l'élite écossaise, dit, nous, on ne va pas soutenir le roi, on va soutenir le Parlement, à condition que, tout comme chez nous, on n'a pas d'évêques, chez vous, vous n'allez pas remettre en place les évêques comme toute cette guerre est finie. Okay. The king surrenders to the Scottish, and the Scottish elite say to the Parliament, oh, we will give you the king if you want. Yes, we want the king. £400,000, please. So the Scottish elite take £400,000 money to get the king. And so the king is in Parliament. The king is in prison. The king is in prison. Okay, right, now, good, the Parliament has won, 1646, the king is in prison. Good, we've won. What do we do now we've won? Oh, well, let's tell the king we want these reforms and he must sign. No, let's have another king. No, we don't need a king. Yeah. So the Parliament side is very divided. They don't know what to do next. And the levellers become very important in the army. The army, the new model army, is the most... Is that a question? Yeah. To the English, yes. Le roi, quand il se rend compte qu'il va perdre encore une bataille, ça va mal, il se rend aux troupes écossaises. Et alors, l'élite écossaise dit, on va vous filer au Parlement anglais, votre roi, mais vous nous donnez de l'argent.
Le roi.
Oui, oui, ils l'ont vendu, oui, tout à fait. OK, voilà, ils l'ont vendu. OK. The army is the most radical section of the parliamentary side. Yes?
C'est quel roi il a
dit qu'on devait bien payer?
En
Angleterre, au Parlement anglais.
Donc c'est le roi écossais qui est...
Non, l'élite écossaise. Pas le roi, c'était lui le roi écossais. C'est deux royaumes, mais un seul roi. Hein?
À cette époque, ces deux royaumes, l'Écosse et l'Angleterre, mais c'est le même roi. Au Parlement anglais. Donc c'est simplement l'armée écossaise qui l'a capturé et l'ont vendu au Parlement anglais. C'est un petit truc. Ok, so, the new model army is more radical. They are the military, they are the people who've been fighting. And the Parliament says, ok, we don't need the army anymore. And the army said, no. We want a new society. We are not going to disband. We are establishing a political party. Ils ont pas utilisé le terme parti politique, ça n'existe pas. Hein? But they decided, no, we are going to guarantee the building of a new society. And so there is a division between the Parliament and the army. Now, here you have to be very careful, because today, in modern politics in the 21st century, if there is a conflict between the army and the Parliament, you think, oh yes, the Parliament is like democratic and the army is not democratic. And in the 16th, in this situation, it's exactly the opposite. It's exactly the opposite. The Parliament represents the rich. Only the rich can vote. The army is not democratic, but it represents ordinary people. And the new model army was very radical. In the new model army, they elected the officers. Il faisait des élections pour les officiers. Not a new model army. It's not like that in the army today. Yeah, the new model army was in fact very democratic. And the new model army has demands. They go to see the parliaments, and they say, and they write a. They write a document called the Agreement of the People. An Agreement of the People. This is a document written by a section of the army to the Parliament. And what do they say? They say, here is what we want. One, Parliament must meet every 6 months. Two, more people must vote. Pour l'instant, il n'y a que les riches qui votent. Nous, on voudrait qu'il y ait quand même plus de gens qui votent. Three, the Parliament must control the army. The King must not control the army. And four, freedom of religion. So these are the demands of the army. The Parliament is more moderate. The Parliament would like to have an agreement with the King. So, well, no, let's make a compromise with the King. The army says, no, we want these radical demands. And the Parliament says, no, let's have an agreement with the King. Oliver Cromwell said, me and my army are coming to visit you in London. And the Parliament says, we agree. Quand une armée vous appelle, il dit, on va venir vous rendre visite. Vous changez d'avis. Okay? So the army begins to impose on the Parliament. The army has more power than the Parliament now. But even inside the army, there are different opinions. And the levellers organise a big debate, called the Putney Debates. C'est une ville, Putney. Les débats de Putney are debates on what kind of society do we want. On one side, you have the levellers, the most radical people in the army. And on the other side of the debate, Oliver Cromwell. So they're debating, yeah? Oliver Cromwell is more moderate, yes, well, I'm not sure. And the levellers have really radical ideas. So this is very interesting. Today, if you are in an army, you're a soldier in an army, and you phone the general, hello, Mr. General, I'd like to organise a debate with all the army. Is this okay? No. In armies, you don't have debates. The new model army was very different, very political. They elected their own officers, and here they organised with Oliver Cromwell the Putney Debates. Well, you can check them out on the internet. Big debates, what kind of society do we want? Big fight, yeah, we need this.
Nous avons la transcription des débats. C'est extraordinaire. And the levelers are saying, we want democracy. We want everybody to vote. Even some of the levelers said, we want everybody to vote, men and women. That was too much. So this, in the second version, they said, we want all men to vote. That was still very radical. Yeah? And so they were just on the point of arguing when suddenly the news arrived in the middle of the Putney debates. The news arrived, the king has escaped. Le roi s'est échappé. Well, this solved the debate a little bit, because one of the debates was, oh, we can make an agreement with the king, we can trust the king. So, no, you cannot trust the king, we don't want this king. Oh yes, I spoke to the king the other day, he is very sad, he apologises for the civil war, he would really like to be a nice king now. And of course, when he escapes, and the war begins again, the civil war begins again. For 3 years, 1648 to... So the second civil war, 1648 to 51, et au milieu de la deuxième guerre civile, ils réussissent à attraper Charles, il va être exécuté. Mais après, il y a encore des royalistes pour se battre encore un an et demi. Right, okay, so, finally, the people who wanted to compromise with the king suddenly discovered he was running away, so they were obliged to accept. But it was very difficult, when they captured the king again, it was very difficult to decide what to do. They wanted to execute him, but they also wanted to have a trial. Ils voulaient avoir un procès, ils ne voulaient pas simplement le flinguer. Ils voulaient avoir un procès. Why? Why a trial? It's a political reason. If you have a trial, you are showing the world that you represent justice. Yeah? Very important to... Donc, ils avaient dit, en direct sur CNN. Ah non, il n'y avait pas encore CNN. OK, they have a trial to show the world what they are doing. Now, this trial is very interesting because it was very difficult for them. First of all, it was very difficult to get judges. So, hello, Mr. Judge, would you like to come and be the judge of the king? We're probably going to execute him. Oh, I'm very busy, I'm sorry, I can't come. Everybody was terrified. Yeah? For two reasons. First of all, if the king's friends win the civil war, and you were the judge who told them to execute the king, then you've had it. But secondly, also, I think there was a superstition. Oh, la la, the king is king because it was God who decided. Yeah, okay. It can be very scary to be the judge at the time. So the judges all said, oh, we're very, very busy. In any case, they managed to find enough judges, and they chose four lawyers to prosecute the king at the trial in January 1849. And they accused the king of high treason and high misdemeanors in the name of the Commons of England. Donc, haute trahison. Ils l'ont accusé de haute trahison. Hein? The charge concluded that he was a tyrant, a traitor, and a murderer, et puis vraiment, vraiment pas gentil, and a public and implacable enemy to the Commonwealth of England. And they said to the king, you may answer. And the king said, I am the king, I am the head of justice. This court is not acceptable because a court can only be organized by me and the king. So I refuse to recognize this court. Everyone was shouting and there was a panic. I said, oh, what should we do? I said, okay, take him back to prison. Let's think about it. And they started again the next day. And the next day, it was a similar confusion. So after 3 days, they finally organized it and carried out the
the trial. 33 witnesses, there were 33 witnesses, 33 témoins, which came to speak, and they decided to condemn the king as a tyrant, traitor, and murderer, and they decided to execute him. They were in a hurry because the King of France and the King of Spain had sent representatives to say, no, don't execute the king. No, we will be your friends. So we will be very friendly if you don't execute the king. Remember, this is the first time a king is executed by the parliament in all of Europe. So all of the kings, all of the kings are very unhappy with this idea. Is he sort of in the la mode? Yeah? Okay? And so a lot of pressure on the government. Also, the ordinary people in London are very angry with the king. They don't want him executed. So in this situation, they decide to execute the king. And the king, in any case, refuses to compromise. Just before he is executed, he sees his children. Hello. Hello, son. Hello, daddy. And he says to his son, he says, you must not accept a compromise. Yeah. When I am dead, you must not become a king who is controlled by Parliament. Never refuse a compromise. Do not become a king who is controlled by Parliament, because God said that the king is the leader of the country, and the Parliament is to help him, and this is the will of God. So you must not accept a compromise. Okay? So, what can we conclude from this? It's very interesting. Le roi, il y croyait vraiment, hein? Il faisait pas semblant, il y croyait vraiment. Hein? That is the moment when he can choose, he can abandon his ideas about what a king should be, or he can be executed. He prefers to be executed. Yeah? But he believes it, yeah? Very, he believes in the old system. Just before they execute the king, they realise there is a little problem. So, on n'a pas rendu illégal de proclamer un nouveau roi. Hein? Il faut voter une loi vite fait. Nous n'avons pas de roi, on n'a pas le droit d'avoir un roi en Angleterre. Allez, tout le monde d'accord. Ouais. Ils ont passé vite fait une loi qui empêchait son fils d'être proclamé roi. And they executed the king. Ça faisait la... S'il y avait eu des journaux à l'époque, ça aurait fait la une de tous les journaux du monde. It was the first, though no newspapers, but it was the first execution of a king, a huge change. Now, il y a un petit post-scriptum, because I'm going to talk to you in a moment about the Commonwealth, but now we have no king, and England is a republic for 11 years. From 1649 to 1660, England is a republic. And I will talk to you about the republic in a moment. But in 1660, when you have a new king, Oliver Cromwell is dead already. He's already dead. And so the new king says, I want to execute Oliver Cromwell. Oliver Cromwell's dead. Okay, dig him up and cut his body into four and put his head in front of my house. And the head stayed for 20 years in front of Westminster. On peut dire qu'il était énervé, le gars, non? Moi, en général, si je suis vraiment énervé, j'enlève la tête de mon ennemi et je le laisse peut-être 5 ans, mais pas 20 ans. Je trouve qu'il a exagéré. Okay, so just an interesting thing that all of the people who were involved in executing the king, who were still in 1660, were executed, and if they were dead, they were executed again. Okay, which is quite poetic, you know. Oh, vous avez été exécuté qu'une fois, c'est rien, hein, moi, hein, deux fois. Okay, right. So, now we have, then, England as a republic.
If you go to the Tower of London,
il y a des gens ici qui sont allés à la Tour de Londres. Je suis allé pour la première fois l'année dernière.
When you arrive at the Tower of London, there is a picture of every king and queen of England. The first king, the second king, the third king. It's very long. And when you arrive at 1649, you have Charles I, this one. And then you have, and it says, to 1649, and then the next one, 1660. And between the two kings, nothing.
Si vous ne regardez pas bien les dates, vous ne remarquez pas qu'il y avait 11 ans de République.
Yeah. This period of 11 years, different historians have a different name for it. Traditional historians talk about the interregnum, la période entre deux rois. Yes? Okay. Une petite erreur, on a oublié d'avoir un roi. More radical historians say the English Republic, the first republic which transformed England. So it's a matter of opinion. Yeah? The official name at the time, Oliver Cromwell's name, was the Commonwealth.
La richesse commune. C'est un peu comme République, Res Publica, la chose publique. La richesse commune. Et c'est très anglo-saxon, en fait.
Okay, so the Commonwealth began, and they had a problem. They had a problem. The problem was that they had to decide, okay, we don't have a king. Well, we don't have this king. What do we do? Do we find a new king? That would be the normal thing to do, to find a new king, a better king. There are a lot of kings around, and maybe the king of Holland or Spain would like to be our king. Second problem, okay, we're not going to have a king, so we need a new system. What kind of system can you have without a king? Well, I don't know. Do you? Ils peuvent pas se baser sur les documents de la religion française, parce que des révolutions plus tardives se basent sur les documents de la religion française. La religion française, c'est pas encore. Alors voilà. So what did they decide to do? Well, it was not easy. Yeah, there was a big debate about the constitution and so on, and I will tell you a little bit about that. But the most important thing is that in these 11 years, the commercial classes got more and more power. And the feudal classes, the old traditional aristocratic feudalism way of doing things, lost power. And the essential thing which Cromwell did is he destroyed the old system. He destroyed the old feudal system, le féodalisme. Not completely, of course, it's a very slow process, but the decisive thing was done there. Now, Oliver Cromwell became the head of state, il est devenu chef d'état, and he was very worried about the levelers, the democrats, who were more radical, so he put some of their leaders in prison. At the same time, he was very worried about the royalists. Ils avaient perdu la guerre civile, mais ils attendaient un moment pour commencer. Hein? Yeah. And so he made sure, put people in prison, executed some people and so on. Yeah, he tried to control the situation. So, I'm just going to put you some dates on the board. Some more dates. From the period of the Commonwealth. I will give you... Non, en principe, vous saviez déjà ces dates parce que vous avez regardé un livre d'histoire avant de venir en cours. C'est ce principe. OK, mais je l'ai mis quand même. Voilà. OK, so, first of all, just the dates, and then I will give you some of the details. So, in 1649, Cromwell becomes head of state, not king, Lord Protector. Seigneur Protecteur, il a inventé. And a new constitution. Just after that, Cromwell goes to Ireland to defeat a rebellion of the Irish. Remember, the Irish are Catholics, so they are a long way from the religious ideas of Oliver Cromwell, who is a Puritan. And I will talk in a moment about the Irish revolts. After 6 years of the system with the Lord Protector, it is not stable enough, and they establish a new system, the Army Military Districts, with a regional military governor for each region. Yeah, so they abolish the Parliament, no more Parliament in 1655, no more Parliament, abolish the Parliament, doesn't work. And direct military rule from regional governors. In 1658, Oliver Cromwell dies, and his son, Richard Cromwell, becomes Lord Protector. But 2 years later, a section of the elite decides to ask for the king, who is living in France, the son of the executed king, to come back and be king again. So that's the short story. The most important thing, I will give you some details in a moment. The most important thing is that when the king comes back in 1660, the system has completely changed. And the king will never again have the power which the kings had before. So there's something a little tricky about this. We have the impression, yeah, king, 1649 Republic, 1660, king. But so you have the impression that nothing has changed. There was a king, and there is a king. But in fact, everything has changed. One historian wrote, "What has been written by the sword cannot be erased by the pen. Ce qu'on a écrit par l'épée ne peut pas être effacé par un stylo." That is to say that the civil war and the execution of the king and the establishment of the republic changed the system. Et c'est pas parce qu'ils disent, bon, finalement, on va avoir un roi, que ça leur renverse. The commercial classes in particular gained a lot of power during the Civil War and during the Republic, and the king came back by making massive concessions and giving a lot of power to the Parliament. Yeah. So, in fact, the king in 1649 and the king in 1660 is completely different. This is one of the reasons that even today in England we still have a queen. On a l'impression que rien ne change en Angleterre parce qu'on a un roi comme avant. Sauf que la reine, elle a le droit d'annuler les lois. Et la dernière fois qu'elle l'a fait, c'était en 1701. C'est un pouvoir qui est tout théorique. Tout théorique. 300 ans. D'ailleurs, si elle le ferait, ça serait rigolo. Ça ferait une crise. Ça réveillerait les Anglais. Là. OK, so let's have a look at some details here. The Irish revolts of 1649. Oliver Cromwell, who in England... represented progressive ideas against the arbitrary power of the king, for more powerful parliaments. In Ireland, he is not a hero at all, because when he destroyed the Irish Revolt, he really established the colonisation of Ireland by the English, by the commercial classes of England. Basically what happened is the Irish were Catholics and they rebelled against English rule. Cromwell and the army arrived in Ireland, destroyed the revolt with a lot of blood, many, many people killed, and took the Irish land and gave it to the generals of the English army, most of the Irish land. And from this date on, almost all the land in Ireland belongs to Protestants from England and Protestants from Scotland. And the Catholic Irish have almost nothing. And even today, as you know, the problem between Catholics and Protestants in Ireland is not finished. And this is the origin when suddenly all of the land, really all of the land, was taken and given to the English military friends of Cromwell. Now, why did he do this? Well, he had a religious reason. They have Catholic ideas. These are the ideas of the devil. God wants us to destroy Catholic ideas. This is Cromwell, not me. Yeah, this is Cromwell. My mother would kill me. She's a Catholic. Okay, Cromwell had a religious idea. Also, a commercial idea. Look at Ireland. They are peasants. It's only petit paysan. They use the land. They don't have good technology in their farms. They don't use the land very well. It is normal that we, the English, we are a commercial class, we should take the land. It's for us, really. C'était l'excuse pour toutes les colonialistes. Quand ils prenaient toute la terre des Amérindiens, ils disaient, bon, ils ne l'utilisent pas bien. Nous, on sait, avec la technologie, produire plein de sucre et tout ça. Bon, ce sont des Indiens, ils ne font pas profiter, ils n'ont pas le droit de l'avoir parce qu'ils ne le font pas fructifier. Yeah? Those are the same arguments in Ireland. Ireland is the first colony of England. The first colony of England. So that's what happened with the conquest of Ireland. The conquest of Ireland. Very, 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 very bloody. Also, they took a lot of prisoners and they sent them to the West Indies as slaves. Vous savez que, peut-être vous savez que l'économie des Antilles britanniques était basée sur l'esclavage, faire pousser du sucre. Et alors ça a commencé avec des esclaves irlandais, hein, avant de passer aux esclaves kidnappés en Afrique. Alors, ils ont commencé un système qui marchait du commercial à ce moment-là. Most of the English supported the colonization of Ireland, except for one section of the levellers who said, no, we are opposed to this. The most significant name here you will see is Drogheda. And Drogheda was just a town in Ireland where there was a battle between Cromwell and his army and the Irish rebels. And it was... Here we go. When Cromwell arrived in the town, the Irish rebels, they hid in a church. They gathered in the church, and Cromwell burnt the church and burnt everybody in it. Okay, so this is, yeah, it's very good old-fashioned war. And Cromwell wrote, "This was a righteous judgment of God upon these barbarous wretches." Donc il les enferme dans l'église, il brûle l'église avec tout le monde dedans. Il dit, bon, c'est Dieu qui l'a voulu. Hein? Yeah, okay. Good old-fashioned way of doing things. Okay. That was therefore then the we sometimes call this the Cromwellian settlement. And even today, the Irish have not forgotten this part of history because it's the beginning of the Irish problem, or rather the beginning of the English problem for the Irish. Okay, back to England. The first constitution established for Cromwell, making him Lord Protector, was called the Instrument of Government. The Instrument of Government.
Now, perhaps you know, perhaps you have already been told, that England today, Britain today, does not have a written constitution. There is no written constitution in England today. But in 1649, we had a written constitution, the first written constitution of Britain. Il y a eu trois constitutions écrites dans l'histoire de l'Angleterre, et toutes les trois, c'est dans ces 11 ans-là. Depuis, on n'a pas eu. Okay. So what does this instrument of government say? First of all, it says more people can vote. However, you can vote if you have an income of at least £200 a year. Now, même que les temps sont durs aujourd'hui, à mon avis, vous avez 300 euros par an. Mais à l'époque, c'était beaucoup d'argent. Okay. So even this new constitution said, really, more people can vote, but really only people with a lot of money. This was, therefore, not an attempt at democracy. In fact, even during the Civil War, a lot of people were interested in democracy, but in a very radical situation. You know, the levellers were very radical. They believed in democracy. But the elite did absolutely not believe in democracy. Number two, you cannot vote if you are a royalist or a Catholic, even if you are rich. Number three, freedom of religion for everybody except who? Mais au niveau religieux, yeah. Liberté de religion pour tout le monde, sauf pour les catholiques, except for Catholics. Yeah? Okay?
Why?
Say again?
Why?
Because Catholics are identified, very strongly identified with the royalists. And also, here we have a new government. When you have a revolution and you have a new revolutionary government, normally, very rapidly, you have an invasion by foreign armies. After the French Revolution, several countries in Europe said, oh, revolution, we don't like that, we will invade. After the Russian Revolution, 23 armies arrived in Russia. Yeah? And so, in this period, the government is very frightened of the Catholics. They say, les catholiques vont organiser pour que le roi d'Espagne vienne nous envahir. That was the idea that Catholics were identified with traitors. Yes, that's the reason. Yeah? Question?
Can you repeat the second one?
The second one, yes. So, the first one was, you can vote if you have £200 a year. Yeah? That was the first one. Yeah. The second one was, except if you are a royalist or a Catholic, you cannot vote. Yeah, you cannot vote. And number three is freedom of religion for everyone, except the Catholics. Ça va continuer longtemps, hein, avant 200 ans, les catholiques ne vont pas avoir les mêmes droits. Pour différentes raisons, ça va devenir plus tard autre chose. Mais là, à ce moment-là, c'est... Bon, ils sont attachés au pape qui a un énorme pouvoir et qui est capable d'organiser le renversement. C'est pas le petit pape d'aujourd'hui. So, donc c'est une idée qu'ils ne sont pas loyaux à la patrie. Ça c'est l'idée. And it was often true. Number four. A permanent army of 30,000 soldiers. Yeah. Donc une armée permanente. Perhaps you remember, the king before did not have a permanent army. When they had a war, they recruited a new army. And when there was no army, they disbanded it. So this is very modern and new, a permanent army. So this is against rebellions. Also against Spain. The big commercial competition is England, Spain and Holland. Holland, in fact, is even more important. Et en fait, il y a, donc justement, de 52 à 54... La guerre contre les Hollandais.
Légion des Pays-Bas. Pourquoi les gens du Pays-Bas, qu'est-ce qu'ils ont fait? Ils n'ont rien fait, sauf que c'était la deuxième puissance commerciale. Hein? Alors, hein? L'Angleterre, England wanted to be the biggest. So, that's the general situation. Cromwell is successful in eliminating the old system, in encouraging the commercial classes, in building international trade, but he has great difficulty in finding a stable constitution, because this constitution, the instrument of government, only lasts for a few years. They elect a new parliament. Cromwell has a lot of ideas for what the new parliament should do. And when the new parliament meets in 54, the new parliament meets in 54, Cromwell says to them, I have 84 ideas. Il a tout préparé, il avait 84 lois prêts à voter. I have 84 new laws, what do you think? And how many did the Parliament agree to? Zero. So let's say there was a big problem to get a consensus on what kind of society they wanted. Cromwell had a lot of ideas. Zero. So after 6 months, he dissolved the Parliament. And when in 1655, the next year, there was a royalist rebellion, which was defeated, Cromwell used the excuse to establish this new system, completely new system, no Parliament. A new system, no Parliament. And this was called the... On Apicella, the rule of the major generals. Donc, gouvernement militaire régional. Nouveau système. This was very religious, because in every region, the country was divided into 12 regions, and each region was governed by a senior army officer. But the general boss was Cromwell. And the major generals were involved also in establishing a new religious atmosphere. No horse racing, no theatre, no cockfighting. Huh? These were things which the Puritans considered to be immoral. Les Puritains trouvaient que le théâtre était immoral. Le horse racing, les courses de chevaux. Et puis des choses que nous aussi on trouve immorales, le combat des coqs et la torture publique des ours, qui était un sport très populaire à l'époque. Oui, vous avez des chiens et un ours, c'est vachement rigolo. Hein. Yeah, okay, so the major generals, they tried to stabilize the situation, and they also tried to introduce a new religious atmosphere with special laws against blasphemy, laws against alcohol. Yeah? They closed the pubs. Ils ont fermé les pubs. Ça a dû être difficile. Vous avez une question, peut-être? Oui, oui, tout à fait. The major generals, donc, sous le contrôle de la surveillance de Cromwell. Deuxième nouveau tentative de stabiliser le système de gouvernement. Ça ne va pas marcher non plus. Et c'est pour ça qu'on va, on va voir cet épisode la semaine prochaine. Mais à la fin, il y a un roi qui revient. Mais je vais vous montrer comment, pour revenir, il fallait qu'il dise, d'accord, je veux bien avoir beaucoup moins de pouvoir. Thank you for listening. Je sais que c'est quand même 90 minutes, c'est pas rien. See you next week. Si jamais...